This is the Sex and Psychology Podcast, the sex ed you never got in school and won't get anywhere else. I am your host, Dr. Justin Lee Miller. I am a social psychologist and research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and author of the book, Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. In the 1950s and 60s, psychedelic drugs were the focus of quite a bit of clinical testing for various mental health issues. However, when the war on drugs began in the 1970s, most testing was abruptly halted. In the last few decades, though, interest in psychedelic-assisted therapies has begun to rise again, and researchers are starting to take notice of the potential applications of these treatments for dealing with various sexual difficulties. And that's what we're going to be diving into today, the small but growing world of psychedelic-assisted sex therapy. Some of the topics we're going to discuss include how psychedelics can put us in the right state of mind for enjoying great sex, which psychedelics have the most promising applications for the treatment of sexual disorders, and what psychedelic-assisted sex therapy does and doesn't look like. My guest is Jeff Lundgren, a licensed clinical mental health counselor, ASEC-certified sex therapist, and psychedelic-assisted therapy provider. He runs a private practice based in Salt Lake City, Utah. He is the author of the new book, Unfolding Eros, A Journey into Psychedelic-Assisted Sex Therapy. This is going to be a fascinating conversation. Stick around, and we're going to jump in right after the break. If you're a fan of this show, then I know you're hungry for sexuality knowledge. But if you're also looking to find a community of like-minded, sex-positive professionals, check out the Sexual Health Alliance. SHA connects you with world-class experts and an active group of passionate, fun, and welcoming students. SHA is at the forefront of sexuality education and hosts monthly live events, both online and in person, with students from all over the world and from all types of backgrounds. They come together to learn, travel, connect, and sometimes form friendships. So, podcast fans, continue advancing your sexuality knowledge, have fun, and meet fantastic people in the process at Sexual Health Alliance. You can find their upcoming events and online certification programs at sexualhealthalliance.com. Hi, Jeff, and welcome to the Sex and Psychology Podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here with you.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation. So the topic for today's show is how psychedelics can assist in sex therapy. And I always like to start off my show with definitions so that everybody listening can be on the same page. So my first question for you is, what is a psychedelic technically? And can you give us some examples of psychedelic substances?
Sure. So psychedelics is not a new human experience. Many of these medicines, at least the plant derivatives, have been used for, in some cases, we believe thousands of years. Today, we have a broader subset of atypical psychedelics that are a part of this greater formula. Some of the historical plant medicines people may be familiar with include psilocybin or magic mushrooms, ayahuasca, mescaline, and ibogaine, which is primarily from the African continent. And then modern inventions might include LSD, MDMA, and then there's these atypical psychedelics such as ketamine, which is widely used today above board. And yeah, these are some classic examples.
And so a psychedelic is basically, it's a psychoactive substance. And I think the way people often think about it is that it's a hallucinogen. So is that sort of what we're talking about in terms of like what the experience of these drugs is, or maybe how they're different from other kinds of substances?
Yeah. So generally, the term psychedelic is a descriptor to define the psychoactive, mind-altering capacity that these medicines produce. Not all of them are hallucinogenic in terms of visualizing or auditory hallucinogens. Some of them really don't contain much, if any, of those types of experiences, but they all in some way, and there are a few different common modes of action in which they do this, they create a different awareness of one's sense of their body and their conscious mind in an experience that is uncannily different and in some cases very introspective.
So it's a sort of broad class of drugs in terms of it encapsulates a lot of different substances that can potentially have some very different effects on people.
True.
Yeah. So thanks for sharing that. Now, early on in your book, you talk about how sex therapists define great sex and how they often talk about it as involving this state of real presence. And then you talk about how psychedelics can put us in that same sort of general state where you've got that feeling of presence. So let's begin there. Why is presence so important for great sex? And how do psychedelics create a feeling of presence?
Yeah, thank you. It's an interesting set of neurochemical activities that occur both within these altered state of consciousness that are created through the use of psychedelics and sexual experiences. And this is, I think, where the theoretical magic occurs, at least if we philosophize on how this application in psychedelic-assisted sex therapy might occur, which is sexual experiences, at least for most people, tend to feel elevated and pleasurable and immersive when there's a sense of kind of leaning into the experience and allowing for the cadence of the arousal process to carry one into states of ecstasy and bliss. It's a type of surrender kind of blended with I'm here, I'm present versus I'm thinking about or I'm trying to remember when. And both psychedelics tend to accelerate this experience for many people, as well as sexual experience. And so that's kind of an interesting entry point, I think.
Yeah. And we've talked about this on the show many times before, that being present is one of the keys to great sex. It's kind of that being in the moment, being attuned to your bodily sensations. And there are lots of things we've talked about as ways that people can try to get to that state of presence, such as practicing mindfulness-based exercises. But psychedelics can be potentially an aid to also help people feel more present because of the way that the drug affects the brain and the body. Now, in your book, you talk about some of the features of great sex that go beyond just mere presence, right? So there's connection, there's authenticity, there's transcendence. So basically, you know, you've got this connective bond with your partner, you feel like you can be your true self, and maybe you even sort of feel transported to a higher state. So tell us a bit more about how psychedelics kind of go beyond just maybe creating that feeling of presence and help us to tap into some of these other key features of great sex.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to touch a little bit on some of the neurochemistry of this process. I think it informs much of the way in which we experience that in a sexual context, as well as how that's facilitated by the use of psychedelics. So psychedelic medicines, in a similar way, invoke a soup of neurochemical responses that include serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin. There's an arousal curve that incorporate things like cortisol and the sympathetic nervous system, as these things then blend and then drop off and or increase, that then culminate in the experience which we call orgasm or sexual release. Psychedelics participate in much of the same neurochemical interactions, and they're a bit different in some cases. For example, ketamine doesn't very strongly participate in the serotonin system, while a serotonergic psychedelic, like many of the DMT compounds to plant medicines like magic mushroom and certainly MDMA. However, the cascade of neuroplastic invoking chemicals that help to encourage the rewiring of brain circuits are influenced by the cascade of these chemicals in a way that altered state of consciousness, of ecstasy, of presence, of bliss, have such strong familiarity that a lot of researchers, which I cite in the book, have strongly suggested that the cadence and the experience associated with a psychedelic experience take on a neurological familiarity that one would experience with sexual encounters. I think, and I quote this in my book too, Annie Sprinkle says in a book, Manifesting Mind, she said, "Psychedelics was my greatest sex educator," which is interesting, that for her, the familiarity of what it meant to be in an intense, elevating sexual encounter felt as if she had understood what that was like in a form of memory from her experience in exploring altered states of consciousness induced by psychedelics. So I find all this just kind of interesting. I hope that answers that question.
Yeah, it does. And it's super fascinating, right? And I think everything that you explained helps to describe the potential, at least from a theoretical standpoint, as to why psychedelics might enhance sex, because they can put us in this state neurochemically that we kind of really need to be in order to have great sex in the first place. So yeah, there's a lot of parallels between where we are mentally when we're having great sex, or where we'd like to be when we're having great sex, because we're not always in that headspace. And then parallels with the state that psychedelic substances might put us in. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to applications for sex therapy, like what kinds of specific sexual problems might psychedelics be useful for treating? So for example, can they potentially help with issues related to desire, arousal, orgasm, pain, all of the above? In what areas do you see the greatest therapeutic potential? So I guess another way of phrasing this is, are psychedelics just a potential enhancer to sex, or in what ways could they help with certain specific sexual problems?
So a lot of this is theoretical, meaning we don't really have a lot of established, published literature that has explored the broad range of what we call sexual dysfunction in association within a therapeutic intervention from a psychedelic. We just don't really know. Now, we do understand, especially in and from the research that's been published over the past, I would say 10 to 15 years, in part, at least within the context of modern day research in this phase, right, where we know that psychedelics have a significant impact on things like trauma, anxiety, depression, compulsive disorders, substance use comorbidities, which can be a factor in sexual dysfunction. And so we understand that psychedelics as a psychedelic assisted therapeutic intervention have capacity to intervene. So the question remains is, well, what does it do for things like erectile dysfunction? What does this do for vaginismus? What does it do for libido or low sex drive, or perhaps out of control sexual behaviors if we're trying to then pull back and regulate with some healthy sexual boundaries? What do psychedelics, or what could psychedelics do? So to answer part of the question is, I think a lot of these presentations that as sex therapists and physicians and others work with individuals, I think psychedelics have the capacity to address the underpinning contributor, the original etiology of that particular dysfunction, as we call it. And that's where I think the magic occurs. So to augment a part of what we're talking about here, because psychedelics have been used in conjunction with sexual activity from a recreational perspective, and even in indigenous populations using plant medicines would often have protocols that might include an abstinence from sexuality, or perhaps even a participation of it on some level, we understand that, or at least it's easy to theorize, that maybe the application of sexual activity with a psychedelic might be the intervention, right? Jeff, what are you doing with clients? Are you having clients have sex and they're under the influence of a psychedelic, and this is not the therapeutic approach? Rather, it's, let's address what's really occurring. Let's address the anxiety, but let's do it in the context with the intention of resolving some aspect of their sexual experience in a way that produces the outcomes that they're looking for. And that's where where this concept of psychedelic-assisted sex therapy, or PAST, I think has its most potent application.
Yeah, you know, you raise a lot of really important points there. I think the first key one is that people might have some misconceptions about what psychedelic-assisted sex therapy is. And I think it clarified that it's not you or some other provider bringing patients in and, they're taking a psychedelic and then having sex or masturbating, right? That's not what this therapy looks like. So what might it look like instead? What are you doing, or what happens in one of these sessions?
So a psychedelic approach for a sexual concern is very similar to what you would see in any psychedelic assisted approach. So we begin, as we would with any client or patient, an intake process to assess both the appropriateness of using a psychedelic and the client's or patient's history, their story, right? Building that level of trust. Although it's interesting how a psychedelic can accelerate so much of what we typically do in classic talk therapy. And then as we set intentions on in what a client would like to receive as a part of that, we kind of cement those in approaching what we call the medicine session. Following the medicine session, and we could talk a little bit more about what that might look like, then we'll follow up with a integration session to then pin back the new understandings or experiences or concepts that evolve out of that medicine session so that we create more durability. And because the arc of treatment in this way, and sometimes we'll repeat the medicine session with its companion integration session in pairs. And like with ketamine, sometimes this might be three or four pairs. The MAPS research with MDMA also has this in several, meaning perhaps four or five. Then we're addressing that concern, that sexual concern. So that's kind of how we would do this.
Yeah, thanks for giving us that insight. You know, I think the reality of what this therapeutic approach looks like is probably very different from people's stereotypes about it. And that's true just of sex therapy more broadly. Like, there are lots of people who are sex therapists who have told me that, you know, the most common misconception I encounter about my work is that people think I'm having sex with my clients, and that could not be further from the truth, right? So I just think it's always important to clarify what we are doing and what we aren't doing in these types of therapeutic approaches.
I think I'll volunteer something here, though. Some of these psychedelic medications are really interesting. And while they may not have an application in the way you described within the clinical space for ethical reasons largely, some of these medications can be used in conjunction with individuals' full consent and experience to explore on their own in a way that might be beneficial. The two medications I think are interesting in this way. One is MDMA, which is such a strong accelerator of pro-social safety and affinity within a relationship, or frankly not. It makes people very warm and fuzzy, and that can inoculate so much fight, flight, freeze within an existing companionship or intimate partnership that couples on their own or individuals on their own can use that medicine guided with appropriate education and legal context, right? These things are important, where they're able to pierce through perhaps some of the barriers that were impacting the sexual dysfunction that they were maybe coming to therapy in the first place. Another medication, LSD, right? Some have considered the most powerful aphrodisiac. It creates a different experience with individuals that, while serotonin might severely inhibit their ability to conduct or participate in sexual activities, LSD really doesn't do that. Now, I would never, to your point, I would never use LSD within a therapeutic setting for two reasons. One, it's illegal. And two, that's not my role as a sex therapist. I would not do that. However, I know people that choose to do that. So education in terms of how, when, what, setting healthy boundaries and all those things for some people, at least within a recreational setting, I think is helpful.
Yeah. And in the next episode, we're going to get all into the complex ethical and legal issues surrounding all of this, because there is so much more to be said on that. But you raise a lot of interesting points about, you know, people maybe using this recreationally as kind of like an augment to what might be happening in sex therapy. But this has me thinking about how, you know, I have a whole section in my textbook on human sexuality where I talk about various drug substances people use and how they impact sexuality, and how it's almost always a mixed bag, where sometimes it creates certain enhancing or positive effects on sexual response, but also can create inhibiting effects. And that's true whether you're talking about alcohol, marijuana, psychedelics, whatever, right? So for example, with MDMA in particular, we know that that can make people crave and really want intimate touch and contact, but it can also make it harder to become aroused or to, you know, to stay physically aroused and have sex. So there's kind of always a trade-off when it comes to using these substances as a sexual enhancer, because you might be getting one effect that's desirable, but another effect that kind of counterbalances that to some degree, right?
That's right. And I think it's important to highlight here that when we're looking at psychedelics from a therapeutic perspective, we're not talking about the effect of the medicine, because it's easy, I think, to acclimate to our understanding of the use of modern day pharmacology. You know, my doctor gives me a medication. It increases the amount of serotonin in the synapse. This is my classic SSRI. Ergo, my mood is elevated, and I'm going to take this medication every month for years on end. The use of psychedelics is causing neuroplasticity. It's shocking the brain, to use a different phrase, into rewiring itself that creates new cognitive and emotional occupancy in a way that was atypical before that medicine session or that arc of treatment. So while people will choose to use medicine as a way to shift and alter and explore, and they do have utility, I believe, in some settings, in this case, we're really talking about how do we create neuroplastic, robust, and durable exchange over a long period of time so that they're not having to take and consume a medication over a long period of time to produce the same effect.
Yeah, that neuroplasticity argument makes total sense in terms of if there is sort of some rewiring, if you will, of the brain, that it might make it easier to jump to that state later, right? And potentially unlock or teach you about different ways of experiencing or being that you didn't know about before. Going back to what you were saying earlier about how psychedelics can teach someone about sex and unlock something new and different for them. But I wanted to go back to something you were saying earlier when we were talking about, you know, treating specific sexual problems. And you mentioned how most of the research that's out there, and it is limited for various reasons, legal restrictions, regulations make it hard to do work on psychedelics in a therapeutic context. But most of the work that's out there looks at applications for PTSD or for other types of general psychological health issues, not specific to sexual issues. But we know that so many sexual issues have their roots in broader psychological issues or in trauma. So I guess another way to sort of think about this is that psychedelics can work as a treatment for various sexual problems to the extent that they might have a common background or pathway with trauma or other mental health issues that can be treated by psychedelics, right?
Yes. I think there's an overlap of psychological comorbidity where the use of a psychedelic from a holistic perspective addresses the underpinnings and any other related peer conditions. And we don't necessarily need to assess all those because we know that the impact of any life experience might occur and show up within a sexual context, but it also could occur within an eating disorder. It also could occur within a maladaptive, habitual experience with, who knows, gambling, whatever. I mean, we're complicated creatures.
Yeah, and you're so right that sexual problems are often the symptom of something else. And it doesn't necessarily mean that there's an impairment in the body in terms of, say, blood flow getting to a certain genital region. You know, there's often a psychogenic cause related to trauma or something else that's causing it. And so, yeah, I think all of this just helps us to better understand what the potential is for therapeutic application. Now, you talked about how there are lots of different psychedelic drugs, and you mentioned a couple of them that might be most helpful in a therapeutic context. But I wanted to ask you something that some of my listeners might be wondering about, which is cannabis, which has historically been classified as a hallucinogen. And there's a growing amount of research looking at implications of marijuana for treating sexual problems. And so I'm curious for your take on this. Do you see cannabis, marijuana, THC, as having the same kind of potential for therapy as psychedelics? And why or why not?
I think this is a bit controversial, and I accept that the conversation around the therapeutic use of cannabis is evolving. My professional stance currently is there's a significant amount of research that shows that cannabis, THC in particular, is not neurogenetic. It's actually the opposite, which is why we believe that developing adolescents should avoid the use of cannabis, primarily because it impedes the process of learning and expanding and creating healthy pathways as a part of the human development process. So if it questionably does not induce the neuroplastic catalyzing cadence of a therapeutic moment, then what is the use of cannabis? Now, I do recognize that, and you had mentioned this earlier, sometimes a low dose of cannabis can reduce anxiety, which if the anxiety is correlated to a performance anxiety or the inability to remain present in a sexual experience, there is benefit there. At the same time, cannabis can also be inhibitory, making it more difficult for men to achieve erection, maintain erection, or even have orgasm, and in similar ways for women. So is there utility there from that perspective? Again, I do think this is controversial, and I'm actually not anti-cannabis. I think that cannabis plays a role in many different areas of health and mental wellness. From the research community, I don't know that we've really identified what that looks like, because the excitement, the social anticipation of using plant medicines, and then the extension into psychedelics is so appealing. We're very excited to create solutions that are very different from the failures that have come from the psychiatry and pharmacological industry. We have these failures, right? And we are really excited about where we can go with this. But that's kind of my stance on cannabis today. I think it is a bit controversial.
Yeah, I mean, it is controversial. And if you look at the data, the evidence, the research, it's kind of a mixed bag. It goes back to what I was saying earlier, how every substance is has a mix of positive and negative effects. And there are some people who are cannabis users who report that it has great effects on their sex life and that it increases desire or arousal, maybe makes them feel like sex lasts longer because it alters their perception of time. And so there can be positive effects, but you also have other people who report negative effects as well. And I think it's also because cannabis is a very complex substance. There are different strains of it. And the research, frankly, is just kind of a mess because it doesn't take into account the strain people are using, the dosage they're using, or even method of consumption. And so we really just need a lot more data to better know and understand like what would be the potential therapeutic implications there. And again, you know, I consider myself agnostic to it. I'll go wherever the data and evidence lead, but we need a lot more data to know.
Yeah. And I think that's true with psychedelics. There's a lot of psychedelics that have some element of debate as to whether there's a therapeutic benefit. So the arguments that we could apply to cannabis aren't unique to cannabis. I think we could apply the same critical thinking to many psychedelics.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you weave in a lot of case studies about clients you've worked with, and I was wondering if you could share with us a story or two about maybe patients you've seen who were dealing with or presenting with sexual problems and how psychedelic-assisted therapy was helpful to them in the course of resolving those problems.
Yeah, thank you. One of my most favorite stories, which I include really early in the book, had a client, I call him Daniel. And he came to me after having experienced medicine. He was using LSD to shift his relationship with pleasure. His course of life, as is true for many, he found himself in a divorce. It was tragic for him, and the love of his life had left. And for reasons that he, on some level, thought he understood, he found himself just not finding sexual pleasure. And he felt conflicted because he was an extremely talented pianist, very artistic. So on some level, he could lean into the space of his heart in this artistic way. But when it came to intimacy and dating relationships, he was just completely shut down and he didn't know how to activate that. So he was guided to LSD from a friend and had found medicine on his own. And then roughly about the same time, he came and found me to do some integration work. So as we talked about his experience, it was incredibly interesting for two reasons. One, there's no therapist involved here at this point. Nobody is sitting with him in medicine. He is experiencing this completely by himself. But magically, he went within, which is what these medications do, right? They activate this concept of the inner healer. He found this extremely dynamic and colorful perception of the aspects of his artistic self in a way that he was able to then overlay into the intimate aspects of his psychology that he had lost. And it was humbling to watch because most of the work that I did was just witnessing this evolution of and growth within him. So that was a really fun experience.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking about that, I couldn't help but think about how it just ties in with things we've talked about on this show many times before, where the process of self-discovery and reconnecting with the self is so important for maintaining a happy and healthy intimate life and intimate relationships. But people really kind of struggle with that. And so, you know, one of the benefits potentially of psychedelic assisted therapy is that it can help us to do those things, to connect with ourselves, to broaden, to expand our horizons in ways that we're just unfamiliar with or don't know how to do, or we otherwise feel too inhibited to do. So I guess, you know, you can think of this as just another potential pathway or route to kind of just accessing those different parts of the self, or getting more in touch with parts of the self that were lost or that you just didn't know were there before.
Yeah. It's amazing to me how rapidly individuals in and from the altered state of consciousness that they choose to participate in, however they arrive there, which may or may not be the use of a psychedelic, by the way. But when they do, they rapidly and quickly move through the steps that we would typically see spanning over months. They can do this in a matter of weeks. That has always made me interested, and I continue to really be excited about that as we evolve.
Yeah, and that'll be another thing that'll be really fascinating to see as we have more research in this area, is sort of the timeline and can this accelerate the therapeutic process, especially for overcoming something that might be incredibly deeply traumatic, like PTSD or some sexual problem that's rooted in some kind of deep trauma. And so to the extent that it can make therapy more efficient, time effective, all the better, because we know therapists have limited time, patients have limited resources. So yeah, anything that can kind of speed it up would definitely be a welcome development. But we have so much more to discuss regarding psychedelics and sex therapy, and I look forward to continuing our conversation in the next episode, where we're going to dive into some of the complex ethical and legal considerations. So thank you so much for this amazing conversation, Jeff. It was a pleasure to have you here. Can you please tell my listeners where they can go to learn more about you and your work and to get a copy of your new book?
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. So the book can be found just about anywhere. It's called Unfolding Eros, A Journey into Psychedelic Assisted Sex Therapy. They can find me online at jefflundgren.com, and I work in a private practice, Oak Branch Counseling in Salt Lake City, Utah. And you can find that online as well.
Well, thanks again for your time. I really appreciate having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To keep up with new episodes of this podcast, visit my website, Sex and Psychology, at sexandpsychology.com, or subscribe on your favorite platform, where I hope you'll take a moment to rate and review the show. You can also follow me on the socials for daily sex research updates. I'm on Twitter and TikTok at Justin Lee Miller and Instagram at Justin J. Lee Miller. Also, be sure to check out my book, Tell Me What You Want. And if you have a question you'd like me to answer on a future episode of this show, you can leave me a podcast voicemail at speakpipe.com/sexandpsychology. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.